Do you remember what you were doing back in March 2011? I'll give you a hint. It's when the Nintendo 3DS was launched in the United States and Europe and Australia and other places. It's also when the Syrian Civil War started, and it hasn't stopped yet. In 7 years, well over 100,000 civilians have been killed, including women, children, and the elderly. Over half of Syria's doctors have fled, and thanks to the Assad government's policy restricting access to health services in unsympathetic areas, once rare infectious diseases have spread rapidly, mostly affecting very young children. This includes typhoid, tuberculosis, diphtheria, and polio. If you're listening to this and thinking, oh my god, how is that still happening? Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and you'll donate $10 to the Syrian Refugee Relief Fund. This only works for U.S. mobile phones, but if you're an international listener or you'd like to donate in other ways, you should go to globalgiving.org and learn how you can help. Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and donate $10 or visit globalgiving.org.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course saving the colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal and Bobinator, Hooker, Hart, and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Taking a bath in the middle of the battlefield. That cool.
Hi, and welcome to another Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast thing. We are doing Breath of Fire, Dragon Quarter. Is it Breath of Fire 5, Dragon Quarter? Is there a 5 hiding in there?
Depending on which region you're in, it might have the 5. It might just be Dragon Quarter.
Yeah, in Japan, it's Breath of Fire 5 Dragon
Quarter. Is it? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was happy about that, because I was reading a Japanese wiki about this game, and it made a mention that overseas versions removed the 5, and as a link, they linked to Hardcore Gaming 101. I'm like, yes, they know about me.
Woo! That's, I noticed. It's the senpai notice me situation here.
Quite literally. So, who are you, Mr. Who?
Well, we should finish the game before any of you get introduced, including me. We're going to say who nominated this game. If I don't do it now, we will forget. And then Ryo Gyu from iTunes will not get a shout out for nominating the Dragon Quarter. It was developed by Capcom Production Studio 3, which I guess is a fancy name to say a team in Capcom. It was published by Capcom. They do all their own publishing. It was released on the PlayStation 2, and is that the only system this is ever available on, or was it, can you get it on like...
I don't think it was ever ported to anything else, and I'm fairly confident it's never seen re-release.
I don't think so either.
Rough. And it was November 14th, 2002 in Japan, but it was also released in the West, in the US and in Europe, so not a very difficult one to get your hands on, I don't think.
It was early in the winter, because I remember digging my car out of like a foot of snow so I could drive.
Just digging my snow out of my car.
Yo, dog, I heard you like snow.
So I was pumped for this game.
I guess.
Could really do with a Breath of Fire here, right?
Yeah.
All right.
No, I've seen videos. No, you don't want to do that. You'll just make your car slide right into the road and hit something.
I don't think his car is on a hill.
Everyone needs to introduce themselves now before the show continues.
Sure, I'm Clade.
I'm Word on the Wind.
I'm Kurt Collada, Disco Alucard.
and the owner of the site. And also, did you actually write the Dragon Quarter article? Or was that someone else? Because we do have
somebody else did, but I felt strongly about it, so I definitely tweaked it heavily.
Well, they've complained about it, so I'm gonna change this article to be extremely positive.
Breath of Fire 4, the guy that wrote it didn't really like it, which is understandable. But
it's one of the most like negative articles on the site.
Yeah, it was overly negative at a time where I wasn't like paying attention to keeping a general tone to it. So when I'm porting over the articles to the new site, like that's when I'm like, I need to find someone to rewrite this, except I don't like Breath of Fire 4 either, so I can't do it.
Ooh, clearly you should have let me do it. I already have shown how much I dislike Spelunky, and I submitted that.
Yeah. I mean, I would be welcome to do it. I mean,
I don't have to make any commitments on the audio. We are talking about Breath of Fire 5. So,
yeah, well, the context that I can say introducing is I love this game. I think it's one of the best RPGs on the PS2.
I agree.
And one of the main reasons this way is because I don't care about the first four Breath of Fire games.
Oh, yeah. No.
So
I will mention... the mindset of I think 2 is the best of the first four, and the rest are pretty forgettable. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Breath of Fire has two games that are good.
Oh,
and I believe I originally bought this game because of the article on Hardcore Gaming 101. I
think. Oh, good.
When you posted the article, I was like, huh, that sounds pretty interesting. I think that I'll get that. I think I bought it years and years ago for like $40, $45, I think. Australian.
Holy smokes. Like. I bought this, I was in a mall in just some weird game store, and there was like Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter for like $5. I'm like, man, I love Breath of Fire. What the hell?
Is this one going up in price because it doesn't have any copies, or is it stayed low?
Nobody cares.
Poor Breath of Fire.
I've actually had an extra copy in my bin that I bring around to conventions, and I'm pretty sure it's...
I store it in the bin.
You can
that's rough.
Literally.
Well, you know, it's not a bin in like the British or Australian sense. Where
it's like
garbage,
Scrooge McDuck's money bin. Kurt just like has this huge tower of games in his backyard.
You've got an addiction to buying Dragon Quarter. You just keep buying them and you put them in the Dragon Quarter bin.
I had an addiction to cleaning out GameStops when they're going under or just clearing out stuff. So I have just tons of games sitting in my closet that I take around to conventions to sell with the books. And that's one that I've had sitting in there.
So no one buys it. So
nobody.
If you're listening and you see Kurt at a convention, please ask for the copy of Dragon's Quarter. Don't
buy it.
It's like
$10
it.
Too. Like just take it, please. It's so good.
I think it's like, I always get confused because with PAL games, sometimes they're like, yeah, we released 6 copies of it. They're all $100. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess I'm not buying that. So before we do talk too much about nothing, one of the people that likes Dragon Quarter, please explain Dragon Quarter, Breath of Fire.
I'll field this. So the setting of Dragon Quarter takes place several kilometers below the surface of the world, which has apparently undergone, apocalypse, as you do. And there has risen basically a mythology based off of a historical event where dragons started to show up, and humans were able to bond with them, and they somehow managed to calculate that there was a percentage that they shorthanded to a fraction, which is referred to as the D ratio. And the D ratio correlates to how likely someone is capable of bonding with a dragon and how effectively they would do so if they did. And the game stars the, as usually named Ryu, who has the astonishingly low D ratio of 8,014, I think it is.
8,192. Like, it's a...
there we go.
It's an order of a power 2, so...
Yeah. I couldn't remember it off the top of my head.
I was a comp sci student, so of course.
You see, this is why Kurt runs the site, and I just occasionally make an article.
He programs it in binary.
And so... Ryu is a ranger on the very lowest, well, not the very lowest, but the lowest civilized level of this gigantic subterranean complex. And as a ranger, it is his task to go around, fight monsters, and, you know, do the kind of thing that you'd be expected to do if you remembered Breath of Fire 2, which means you might be asked to do laundry for someone. But, things don't exactly go that way when he ends up bonding with a dragon, Ajin.
Oh, wow. I can't believe that happened to the guy with no D ratio. That's astounding.
It's
There's no connection to, like, the other Breath of Fires, by the way, really. Like, I'm
not in any direct canon or anything. It's got, like, okay, we've got a dude named Ryu, we've got a lady named Nina, and we've got a cat lady. There's a guy named Bosch who takes the place of, you know, the character who's called Bosch in 2. Yeah. But, for the most part, it's actually got a lot of narrative depth and goes into a lot of themes of, like, classism and elitism and, like, that kind of thing. If you have a poor D ratio, you live at the bottom. You are hated, you are unappreciated, and you get to breathe the shit air.
I feel the narrative of this is very minimalistic compared to a lot of other JRPGs. Like, the dialogue mm-hmm. It's very terse and to the point. The cutscenes are also very short, which also plays into another aspect of the game, which is, I guess we'll get to later. It has more of a dungeon crawly feel. Like, you spend a lot more time going through dungeons and fighting battles than you really doing anything else.
Combat's a little different to your standard dungeon crawler or JRPG, right?
It is very tactical. When you get into a fight, it turns the field that you're currently into a battlefield, and there are no cells. There's no squares, there's no hexes. It is free movement, and positioning is extremely important.
It's so you have each of the three characters. Like, so the most of the game, like, you start off with just Ryu and Bosch, but Bosch is obviously a bad guy, so he doesn't stick around for very long.
He's a crutch character for the outset.
Yeah. So you have Ryu, Nina, the little angel girl, and Kat, right?
Lynn. She's Kat too.
Yeah. Or, you know, the Kat girl character. And each of them have their own specific roles in combat. So Ryu is the character that...
He's the
face puncher. Yeah, he's a close range. He has the highest defense. Nina is a magic user, and she can not only attack the distance, but she can do traps, like, on the ground.
Yeah, it's actually emphasized that she do traps. She only starts with traps. She doesn't get direct effect spells until rather a bit later, and they're generally less effective, so you're mostly going to be using Ryu to bait enemies around into Nina's traps, which hit harder than anything Ryu does.
And then Lynn, she has a gun ability, and she can also kind of maneuver enemies in the battlefield to get them into the traps.
Mm-hmm. She can also steal things because she can turn a gun into a vacuum.
I just want to find out. You call it you said a gun ability. Is it just a gun, or is this like a magic?
She uses guns.
Yeah, it's just yeah.
Well, because I just like the idea that like your ability is to gun. She just runs around with a gun. Because the setting is sci-fi-ish.
If 90s comics taught me anything, having a gun is a superpower, okay?
Like, that's right. Like, in, like, a fantasy world, running around with a gun is like, oh, don't mess with them. They got gun. But because I remember that, yeah, most of your enemies are, you know, not ranged, especially comparatively.
Yeah, but I just love the synergy that each of the characters have a very specific role that they play, and everything is about is using those three in different ways. And I've never played a game that really captured that same interplay between the characters before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's even further. One thing that you might not even realize is that when you're moving around through the dungeons, and this is like one of those games that took inspiration from, oh, hey, enemies are actually enemies in the field, and you don't just have random encounters. If you contact them, then you fight them. And it's got that kind of thing before it was cool.
And you can also do weird stuff, like you can drop little bits of meat to bait enemies away from each other so that you can just fight them one by one instead of, fighting them all at once.
I was just getting into that. If you set certain traps onto the field and then you get into a fight while you're near one of the traps, they'll be in the battlefield and Ryu can still interact with them. So if you set bombs down onto the ground, you can have Ryu walk right over and set them off manually, which actually makes them more effective than having them explode on the field.
And there's lots of weird ways that this game works. Like, I feel this was kind of influenced by Resident Evil in a little bit, because they wanted to emphasize this, like, survival aspect of the game.
I can see that.
Especially in the way that, like, if you listen to the sound effects and just sort of the way it's sort of borrowed from that, even though, like, it's not, like, a horror game, traditionally speaking. And they also did the thing where they limited the save tokens, and I know they changed that for the European version.
From what I remember, the quick save, or rather, like, the suspension save in the European version is what they changed about that. Like, it works kind of like a permanent save, but...
You can only do something. It like a limited number of times or something like that.
Something like that. Whereas like you get scored on your performance at the end. In the US version, you know, if you use the suspension save, which, you know, erases itself when you load, it doesn't count against your score, but I do know the European one does.
So what's mean?
Yeah, and the other main thing about this game is the that little percentage that ticks up very slowly over the course of the game.
Yes, the D gauge.
Yeah, the D gauge. So it starts at 0, and if it reaches 100, you lose the entire game.
Yep, that is, short of a party wipe, that is, you know, the only, actual failure condition.
And technically, it does tick up very slowly if you're walking around, but unless you're just, like, dicking around for no reason, like, there's no way that you would ever, like, reach that level.
It goes up whenever Ryu is walking around in the field, but extremely slowly, and when he's using powers related to the dragon, which makes it go up distinctly quicker.
Yeah,
if you never use any powers over the course of the game, you're probably going to have, like, a 15 to 20% D gauge at the end of it. So, you know, that's not really a factor.
And at the same time, like, these dragon powers are hugely powerful.
Oh, yeah.
You can just crush boss battles, like, without even really thinking about them. But the trade-off is that your D percentage will go up a lot. So you need to use this stuff sparingly.
Yeah, you're trading time for power.
And it gave some real consequence to using these things.
Because the game, it is described as a JRPG. But you've also said that, you know, there's these aspects of... you know, it's got suspension saving, it's got a thing that basically instant game overs you if you use it too much. It's not a long game, right? Like, it's actually quite a short game.
Yeah, you can...
7, 8, 9 hours, maybe?
Yeah, like, 8 to 12 hours, depending on how familiar you are with the game.
And it also had that thing where you could, it's not quite a roguelite, but it has sort of aspects of it that at any time you can restart the game and you can sort of keep certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And offhand, I forget exactly what they are. Like, I know there's chests you can stick things into. And,
yeah, there's those. The big sell about the the respawn or the give up system, as it's called, is when you do that, you preserve and bank your party experience. Each character gets experience individually, but after each combat, you get a party experience reserve, and that is experience that can be issued out individually to any of your party members as you see fit. So if you get to a point where, oh, hey, I've got a lot of these party experiences banked, but I can't really deal with this part, and I think I've just kind of dead-ended myself, you can select give up, go back to the beginning of the game, and anything that you threw into those storage boxes will still be there for you to pick up. And you'll have all of your party experience to give yourself a leg up in the early game so that you're not going to be spending as many early resources and are able to get through, like, earlier content quicker.
Without burning through your dragon powers, too.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't be using those out of boss battles anyway. But since you run past most enemies, like, if you choose to replay the game, like, it's going to go fast because you don't need to fight the little trash guys. But I think the way that this system worked... the way it communicates itself is, I think, one of the biggest marks against this game, because people felt that they needed to replay the game over and over and over again, and you don't really need to. Like, I think when I first played this game, I restarted after the first dungeon just because I had a better idea how the battle system worked, and then maybe a couple hours in, I restarted again, and then my third playthrough, I didn't have a problem, I just beat the game.
So
it's not something that you really need to grind through, even though it gives the impression that it is. Like, I don't think you ever need to use the system.
No, you don't. And I'm the living proof. I didn't use a guide. I made it through on my first run without ever using give up or eating a party wipe. I had a perfect playthrough the way through. My percentage was like 99.68 at the end of it, but I made it.
Yeah, I played very conservatively. Like, I used my dragon powers in one kind of hard boss battle, and then I saved it till right in the end, like the last series, and then I was at like 90 some and was able to beat the game. But I mean, it's one of those games that seems hard, but once you learn it, it's not really that bad.
That's kind of a problem, like, to have all of this systems there and then be kind of like, well, yeah, but you don't really use them? Like,
yeah, the fact that it doesn't explain that is, I mean, there are, like, two major reasons I think people don't like this game, and how poorly the game communicates the way it works is one of them.
So,
and it's also kind of weird is that on subsequent replays, it will show you extra cutscenes.
Yep. That is part of the scenario overlay system, which was also used in the zombie game.
Dead Rising. Yeah, Dead Rising sort of borrows some elements from this game, and I think went over a little bit better because it was zombie smashing.
I mean, would you say that the lighter sort of elements and length made this game... was it less popular? I don't think it was popular in Japan, was it? Like, it didn't...
Well, they don't think so either. Six. I mean, the series died.
Quade, you're here. I know you are not strongly for this game. Is there anything you sort of want to say in how you responded to this game? Like, what was the... What do you not like about this one?
I've been sitting here thinking forever, and it's just... This game never really... really rubbed me as fun. The weird tactical stuff, I just was never really blew me away. I mean, like, because when I first bought it, I was like, ooh, I want a new, nice, sweet little traditional RPG. And I was like, okay, this isn't it. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to give it another fair shake several years down the road. I'm like, this is okay, but man, nothing just really gets me excited about it. I can't put into words why this is, like, really just not one of my favorite games. I've been trying for ages.
I really like the setting. I think the whole overall, like, stuff is what sold me on the game. I'm like, wow, that's cool. It's like a sort of, obviously, it's always post-apocalyptic or weird underground society. And there's all this, like, kind of cool stuff going on. And then there's all this mystery and all these little hooks in there. But because I think you're sort of constantly unsure if you're doing the narrative right, which is good for an RPG.
That's one of the big things that I always just... Because, I mean, you know, it's like, you're right, you're not really missing a whole lot, but there's always that niggling little thing in the back of your head. You're like, wait, what's this D-ratio, and what's this give-up thing, and what's all this little stuff? And it's like, man, I don't know, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Also, like any survival horror game, which is it does kind of connect to, that whole, like, D-meter about to get you killed thing, kind of threw me off a lot, because I'm like, am I supposed to use this?
You know,
am I going to hit a point where I'm going to be like, do I need to?
But I never really thought of the D-gauge as, like, a survival horror element, but now that you mention it, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Of just like, oh, hey, I'm going to die now, or I'm going to die sooner or later. And I hadn't really thought of it in that way before, but I think by taking that into account, I think this might be the scariest horror game I've ever played.
It's very anxiety-inducing in a way that I don't know any other, especially Japanese RPGs, really are.
And, well, I want to kind of mention this because it had always bothered me for years. The manual makes it almost sound like your save file is completely wiped. And it's always bothered me, and I had to, like, actually ask Word about it one day. It's like, if I hit 100, do I lose all of my progress and all my D-ratio and everything? Because, boy, the game really makes it sound like that's what happens.
Yeah, because I don't really know, but I do know that, like, you can't copy your save game from any memory card. It's one of the very few games where it's locked, so you can't make, like, backups and things like that.
Oh,
the GameCube does that a lot. I don't know why. This is a PlayStation 2 game, but the GameCube, I remember every freaking save being locked.
I can understand why they did that, given that, you know, you're actually being scored on this. You know, it's like kind of like how even like Resident Evil 2 Remake actually like takes into account, you know, how many times did you save to, you know, give you a score of, you know, your performance overall.
Does Remake 2 actually factor that into your rank? Or
yes,
is it just
I just said
a
that.
Flag? Oh, no, I know it, I know it keeps track of it, I just wasn't actually sure if it actually applies it to your rank, because it does in the original Resident Evil 2.
I haven't played it, but from what I've seen people saying about it, if you save more than 3 times, it disqualifies you from an S rank.
Damn, S rank, that's pretty in line with the original game, though. But I do think that, like, is that a problem with this game specifically, that the sort of general RPG audience is kind of more into a sort of sandboxy or kind of do as you please to an extent, sort of experience, and then when you throw in something that has that much like anxiety, are you like, oh no, this is not, I did not sign up for this. I wanted a game that had, maybe,
because I mean, the Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest games, like the perception that is that JRPG fans aren't good at video games, like they just want experience, and so if there's any challenge, you can just go and grind and get stronger, and eventually you can do it. You can't You're kind of limited to the amount of grinding you can do in this game, because I don't think enemies respawn.
Enemies do not respawn. If you've completely cleared out the entirety of the complex, and you know you're able to return to given points, you know there are points of no return, but like any place that you can still return to, it's going to be blank. You can explore.
Which I actually like a lot. I think that's pretty cool.
It's like, if you like miss something, you can go grab it without getting pestered about it. But you cannot just really keep grinding. Instead, like the way that you make your party better is to fight better, because your party experience pool has like a direct correlation to your performance in a combat. You know, if you fight more enemies at once, that improves your score. The less damage you take, that improves your score. The more damage you deal quickly, that improves your score. And that's what you do to make your team powerful, is to, you know, actually fight well, as opposed to fight a lot. Fight smarter, not harder.
In the sort of systems here, because it's something that when I've looked at this game, I'm like, I could never really ultimately hash out if the whole replaying system was a sort of crutch that was implemented into the game, because the format of kind of one straight through, you got to play quite well, or at least play, you know, acceptably well to get through the game. If that was, they just sort of at some point went, and they sort of chickened out on it and went, okay, well, we'll incorporate a replay system so that you can grind out through the game, like, to try and
kind of see that.
Yeah, it's basically like it was a compromise.
Yeah, that's what it really does seem like to me.
It advertises the scenario overlay thing. It's like, oh, well, keep restarting so you can see more and more cutscenes too. So
yeah, like, they try to turn it into a feature, but
yeah, this game, it's weird.
It makes sense in Dead Rising, because Dead Rising is like, yeah, you learn the stage, and then, because like, it's not long either. I think Dead Rising is like, what was it, like 3 hours, 4 hours for the whole game scenario to play all the way through.
It's not a big timer too, right? Dead Rising?
Dead Rising 1, I think two was a couple of days longer, and 1 has some extra days. But the main thing is that it's got it's a very open, flat sandbox game that kind of has you running around and doing a lot, so you don't ever feel like, you're like, oh, maybe I'll do that next time, or maybe I'll go here next time and see if it plays out differently. Whereas this one doesn't play out differently, so it's just a kind of like really clever system that's bolted into a game that doesn't really know what to do with it at all.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Does this game only have the one ending?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, unless you let the D-gauge fill, in which case you're treated to a dragon ripping itself out of Ryu's spine. That's fantastic.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not counting.
That's what you call it, like a non-standard game over or whatever.
Yeah.
Nice little... I like that kind of thing. That's nice.
So I originally had gotten hyped up about this game because of the soundtrack.
Soundtrack.
Which was composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto and produced by Yasunori Mitsuda, which at this point, they were like two of the biggest like video game music scene people. And the soundtrack is amazing. It's just like, I mean, generally, if you listen to a Hitoshi Sakimoto soundtrack, you kind of know what you're getting, especially nowadays. Like, he's kind of on autopilot when you play like Valkyria Chronicles or Dragon's Crown. Like, they're good stuff, but it's pretty typical. This was during his more, a little bit more experimental, so beyond just like the orchestral stuff, there's more of an electronic undertone to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the Ranger Beast theme, like, I just love the hell out of that theme.
Yeah, and then like the first like actual dungeon music called Going Out to See the Sky, that's got like a lot of, you know, kind of like electric undertones to it as well.
Yeah, the battle music is great as usual. All the dungeon themes have that same electronic feel to it. There's one, the track, I think the electronic suppliant building, that's just, it's so damn moody.
Yeah.
Like,
the name of the track is, but there's like one that's just like, it's just the grungiest damn song. It's like almost like a song composed of just metal warping upon metal.
Yeah, and it's so good. And I had listened to the soundtrack so much before I got the game. And it actually, like, during at the time, again, I was a senior in college working on my senior project, and I did a game called Shining Force Ripoff, which was a Shining Force ripoff, and I actually ripped off sprites from an emulator. But I was listening to the soundtrack to this game a lot, and the basic battle system was based off the concepts of this, that, you know, characters could shuffle people around on the field and knock them into scenery, which I don't think you could do in this game, but... one of the reasons I actually like the game Into the Breach so much is that it sort of borrows that same idea that you have three units that each have different ways to attack and shuffle people around the field and use that in various offensive and defensive ways.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that is an interesting thing. Does this Does it last for the whole game? Like, does it feel fresh the whole time, or do you get kind of exhausted of the systems before you've reached the end?
Yeah, I think it works, especially like whenever you get into a boss fight and they've got like weird gimmicks, like, oh hey, this boss turns invisible, so it's like, oh shit, where the hell do I put the traps?
Well, I mean, when we were doing the Vagrant Story podcast like a month ago, I don't like Vagrant Story because everything I think Vagrant Story tried to do, Breath of Fire, Dragon Quarter does so much better. And I think the battle system is one of those reasons, because I think Vagrant Story was really struggling to try to get a battle system working with one single character and never really got there. Whereas this, by introducing all those other three characters, because it works very similar in that you run around, you target an enemy, and then there's different combo chains that you can go around that has different effects. But you don't have to worry about like a dumb rhythm game in order to make things attack, or just like a nonsensical risk meter. Like, it just, you know, you have an amount of AP based off of how much you moved, and that determines how many and what type of attacks you can do. And it's just much more straightforward and cohesive, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like XCOM.
The action points are very similar to time units now you mention it.
Yeah, it's at the time that was the closest thing that I could really consider, especially considering something like Final Fantasy Tactics, which just has like move action phase versus, you know, time units.
Yeah, it's a lot more freeform, which is kind of cool. Now, I don't know if you have anything more to say. Music is almost always the last thing we mention. Anything else before we attempt to rank this title?
Nah, I think that wraps it up.
Awesome.
That might be the first time we've
mentioned
that.
Like, damn it! Feels like,
no,
realistically,
there we go.
I feel like realistically, the only complaint that I have about this game is I don't like Lynn's hat.
Oh yeah, when I said the two things that I think people hate this game for, one was the scenario overlay sort of stuff. The other thing is just that it's so drastically different from the other Breath of Fire games.
It like, looks just like a PS2 game though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was playing it on an emulator just recently, and I was just kind of shocked to see it's like they really turned up the slider on the grain filter. And it's something that I had never quite noticed playing on an old CRT, which is interesting because the characters have like a cell shaded look to them. Yep. But they all look very very gaunt.
Everyone
looks like,
you do know, not like the character design.
Isn't that supposed to be because they're like
exactly
kind
like
starved?
Yeah, it totally makes sense within the context of the game. But when you compare it to all the other games, like I know one point of contention with Breath of Fire fans is that like the dragon in this game looks nothing like the dragons in the other game. But like I said, like I never felt like Breath of Fire was anything worth caring about. Like there's never been bad games, but like just I can't muster strong feelings about it, whereas this game is one of the most like innovative of its type, and even the games that are kind of influenced by it aren't really anywhere close to it as far as what it's doing.
Yeah, the only Breath of Fire other than Dragon Quarter that I would go to bat for, as I said, is 2, and that's mostly because, you know, it, you know, similarly dares to go places that a lot of other games don't dare to do. Like, you know, it's probably the first game that we got in the West that has profanity and openly says, you know, screw religion.
And we're going to rank Breath of Fire 5. I have very little opinion on this. I'm only here to make sure it does not go above Blue Stinger.
So about that. So Kurt, you were saying that this is better than Vagrant Story. Well, Vagrant Story is at 109.
Oh yeah. I know Xerxes was pushing high on that, and I was sort of like, I can't. But I mean, I will take the same stance as I did in Valkyrie Profile that I would easily put this in the top 50. I don't know if anybody else shares that same strong feeling, but
I definitely like this game a lot. I don't know if I would say top 50 a lot, but it's definitely top 100.
Why? I know we've spoken about the game, but what specifically puts this one above most other, like,
well, first
I guess
off, I'm going to invoke
in
the Xerxes classic of a lot of people haven't actually given this game a fair shake. They haven't given it a chance, and we need to promote people to give this a fair shake and a fair chance, because this is, you know, a fine game and it deserves to be played.
If anybody listening to this sees me at Too Many Games and I still have a copy of that, just say you've listened to this podcast and I will give it to you. I'm not even joking.
Man, that is a prize. We have a prize for once.
This is the Kurt bounty.
Locate Kurt and he will give you a copy of the game, unless you're second, in which case you get nothing and you lose.
And I mean, whoever you are, I hope that you like it. I don't make a guarantee because I'm aware it's a very divisive, weird game, but
And that's the other thing that I would say is in its favor. You know, this game dares to try something different. It's not just, you know, the usual fare.
It's basically the same way I feel. Because when I look back about all the PS2 era JRPGs, I mean, there were a ton of them. And most of them were reasonably good, but at the same time, like, this is the one that just, like, is just so out there compared to, you know, the Xenosaga games, the Tales of games, the Final Fantasy games. You know, just, like, pick any major game, and it's just so completely different.
You know, when I stop to think about it, when it comes to, like, PS2 era JRPGs, the only one that I can actually think of and say with conclusion that I actually finished was FF10, other than Dragon Quarter. And I played those two are the only ones I actually finished.
What
did I finish? I definitely finished Suikoden 3.
I don't even know what Suikoden looks like.
Finished a lot of these.
Is Run Like Hell a JRPG?
I don't think so.
I couldn't tell you.
I need to see a list because I played a lot of them, but I don't know which ones I actually beat.
Did I buy Rogue Galaxy? I think I tried to finish that. That was long.
That's a long game. I finished that one.
And that's another thing in its favor. You know, a lot of people these days are going, like, oh, I don't have time for games. Capitalism is keeping me on a short leash. Well, this is a short game.
I don't have time, and capitalism is keeping me on a leash. It's terrible. Too much. This game is too accurate to I like games that have pertinent.
This game is really accurate to the current state of affairs too.
I always appreciate games that did that.
And here it came out like 15 years ago. We've got a Kojima example of being ahead of the curve here.
Unfortunately, I don't think no matter how hard I try or how many user groups I join, I will not explode into a dragon. I'm trying.
I based a tabletop character off of this once.
That's fair enough. I think it's a cool character. I mean, we do have to give it a number somewhere. I know you've given me two numbers. We've got top 50 and top 100, which are both not numbers, really. And you got to pick some games here. Like,
I'm just looking to, like, what other PS2 era JRPGs did you guys do?
No, that's not a PS2 game. Well, I mean, because Clade usually asks us to do them, and then we rank them really low because, you know, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I did Tales of Tibbets, which, I mean, I don't think is a great game, but I like talking about it, and I think we rank that kind of middle of the line.
I'm having a hard time finding RPGs in this zone in the first place, and the only one I found was Ultima 7 and Mother 3.
We have not done many high-ranking PS2 JRPGs. We haven't had those nominated.
Here's my opening bid. Number 75, Displacing Faster Than Light.
I've never played Faster Than Light. I feel like I've also had the same conversation about never playing this game and swore that I would and then didn't.
You probably should, because it's from the dudes that they made. They made it, and then they made the game that you just liked. Come on.
I know.
Yeah, but Faster Than Light is the one that, like, everyone always just complains it's down to RNG as opposed to your strategy.
Well, they're like, only 20% right, at best.
But that's also the problem with Into the Breach. Well, not completely, but this is a... RNG.
No, I mean, like, that's the thrill of a rogue. You've got to take the, oh, I got the good weapons with, okay, my ship's blown up for the third time. Here we go.
Okay, great. So there is Panzer Dragoon Saga. And I think it's kind of comparable to be in that
66
neighborhood.
For our listeners. Panzer Dragoon Saga. I will say that at number 77, we have the famous PC JRPG, Deus Ex.
JRPG.
You can't convince me that that is not, well...
I was really afraid...
You've got 10 seconds to get out of here before I add you to the NSF casualty list.
I really was afraid we had Septera Corps at 77 when you said PC JRPG.
We need that one on there. Not high, though, because that game does not get high.
That's what I was afraid of for a second. Like, 77? So, I'm like, wait, what?
I mean, this one, I do have to, like, compare it to something like Deus Ex, because, you know, that is a strong RPG. I know Panzer Dragoon Saga is also in there. So we got a lot of strong RPGs in this zone. We have a few.
I do think I will concede that Deus Ex is a better game, both in concept and execution, than Dragon Quarter. So I think I'd be fine with displacing Garou then.
Garou, Mark of the Wolves! Howl. Yeah, I like that game. I actually like this game more than Super Meat Boy, so that's kind of... this is where I get, okay, well, if... I got two people here, including the person that owns the site, telling me that you should play this game. So that's a strong recommendation. So
my personal spot would be between Castlevania 4 and Seiken Densetsu 3, just because I'm not really a big Seiken Densetsu 3 fan, but I also haven't played it more than half an hour. So
I'm the opposite. I like SD3 way more than Castlevania 4.
Oh, I mean, I also think Castlevania 4 is too high, but it is what it is. It's science.
It's super Castlevania. It's not even a regular Castlevania.
It's super tedious.
But I mean, this neighborhood, I'm fine with anything. Hangs out with.
I am going to talk to Clade real quick because he just.
So better or worse than Tales of the Abyss, since we were discussing that last time?
Well, let me put it this way. I own this game still, and it's one of the few games that I don't like, but I still own, because, man, I really try it. But every time I look at my shelf, I'm like, I don't really feel like playing that right now.
So you're like me, and again, Vagrant Story. Is that like I keep it around every couple of years? I'm going to love this game. Then I play the intro, and I'm like, this was awesome. I'm going to just go out on this high and take it out of the system.
Me and you are like the exact opposite between this and Vagrant Story. I'm like, everything this game did, Vagrant Story just did better. And, yeah.
Well, Tales of the Abyss, we put at 272.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't put this above Tales of the Abyss, but for some reason, all my favorite games... it's like
it feels like it.
Well, I'm getting told that we need to ramp this one up. So Clade is saying whoa, and in that case, I guess we put it below Deus Ex.
I'm fine with below Deus Ex.
And dragons are superior to wolves, maybe? So I guess it goes above Garou.
You ass.
So that's where it goes. It's yeah. No one can stop me now, because we are out of time, and that means that it is going at number 78, below the PC classic RPG action game Deus Ex, and above Garou, Mark of the Wolves, which I personally like more than Dragon Quarter, but I have been super outvoted, so that's where it goes. Thank you for listening.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101, I know I did, by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.